When I wish I was smiling, it means... not collected, there are other papers. Sanchez Earth is still lying on the other side of the door. Anyone at home? Perhaps she's gone away. No, no, she always tells us when she does. I wonder if I want to take a look. You can't see a thing through the letterbox. Now, I wonder if... there's a couple of weeks' newspapers lying here. Letters, too. No, steady. Keep control of yourself. You mustn't pass out like a schoolgirl.
It's time for you to take your place on the jury as Bristol Myers, makers of new boat toothpaste, invite you to... consider your verdict.
Gentlemen of the jury, Philip Barker stands before you charged with the murder of Miss Elsie Morris, a middle-aged spinster who lived alone in a large house on several acres of ground on the outskirts of Chester. On the 3rd of November 1967, which was a Sunday morning, the local newsagent was delivering newspapers through the letterbox and heard it fall on other papers lying inside the hallway. Deciding to investigate, the newsagent, Mr. Barry, tested the front door and found it unlocked. On entering the hallway, he found a quantity of newspapers, letters, bills, circulars, and then, at the foot of the stairs, a sight so gruesome, so horrifying, as to cause one almost to faint. This was the partly decomposed body of Elsie Morris. There was a poker nearby, and it was obvious she had been battered to death. What sort of woman was she? In spite of her years, Miss Morris was accustomed to travelling to London quite frequently. Indeed, the last time, she stayed there for some 3 months at the King's Palace Hotel. Why was she killed? We do not know. Robbery can be discounted, for when Miss Morris's body was found, upon her fingers was a valuable diamond ring. She also wore a heavy gold chain and an antique gold watch. Nothing in the house had been disturbed. You will hear of the extraordinary process by which the police were led to Gresford Prison, where the prisoner at the bar was identified by two separate witnesses as the man seen in the vicinity of Elsie Morris's house just prior to her death. The evidence against him, members of the jury, is incriminating in the extreme, and we are sure that you will not hesitate to return a proper verdict, that you will find Philip Barker guilty of murderous assault. And now, with the court's permission, I call my first witness, Miss Margaret Castle. Miss Castle, how are you employed?
I'm a domestic help, sir.
And where do you work?
I work for Mr. and Mrs. Arkwright at Treetop Hill.
Miss Morris was a neighbour of your employer's, was she not?
That's right, yes.
And after you had seen a report in the newspapers in which the police were asking for information concerning associates and friends of Miss Morris, did you not make a statement?
Yes, I did.
Will you repeat to the court the substance of that statement, Miss Castle?
Well, I told them of the man I'd seen on the 16th of October last year. It was in the morning, about 10:30.
And what was he doing, Miss Castle?
He was walking up and down on the grass verge outside Miss Morris's house.
Is that all he was doing? Walking up and down?
Yes, he seemed to be thinking.
Why do you remember this incident so clearly, Miss Castle?
Oh, because of the clothes he was wearing.
And what clothes was he wearing?
A dinner jacket and a black tie.
At 10:30 in the morning?
Yes, I thought it was funny.
And had you ever seen the man before?
No, never.
When did you see him again?
Well, I didn't see him in person, like. I was shown a photograph and I was asked if I'd seen him before. I said that was the man, but... Later, I was taken down to Gresford, the prison there. Then I saw him in person. I picked him out in an identification parade.
You had no hesitation in doing so?
Oh, no, he was the man, all right.
The man standing in the dock?
Yes, that's him.
All right, Miss Castle. Thank you.
This is a very dramatic and arresting story you have told us, Miss Castle. Are you sure it's a factual one?
I'm under oath. What do you mean, factual?
You are, in fact, only repeating what you've already told the police, are you not?
Yes, but it's true.
Are you sure he was wearing a dinner jacket? It seems an odd attire for a man to be wearing at that time of day.
I'm positive.
Was he wearing an overcoat, a hat, and a scarf?
No.
I put it to you, Miss Castle, that that's hardly the sort of clothes for a man to be wearing in order to endure the rigors of a cold October morning.
I thought it was strange myself. That's why I remember it so well.
Are you enjoying being here in this court?
Well, it is an experience.
Are you sure that you're not perhaps letting your imagination run away with you a little?
Not at all.
We shall see. I want to deal now with the photographs which the police showed to you. Were you certain in your own mind that the man in the photograph and the man you had seen in the dinner jacket and tie outside Miss Morris's home were one and the same person?
I was, and I still am.
Do you not think it a little unfair that you should have been asked to pick this man out of an identification parade after seeing the photograph and knowing that that was the man who had excited the police's interest?
Well, I suppose if you put it like that, it was, yes.
Thank you, Miss Castle. That's all.
I now call Mr. James McCloyd to the witness box. Mr. McCloyd, how would you describe yourself?
Well, now, I've been called various things during the course of my life. Tramp, hobo, vagrant. I prefer to be known as a gentleman of the road.
In other words, you have no fixed abode?
No, none, sir.
Where were you during the early hours of the 16th of October, 1967?
I was in Treetop Hill.
And what did you see there that ought to interest this court?
I saw a lot of things.
Yes. But what in particular?
Well, I was walking down the road whistling to myself, you know, thinking what a bitter cold night it was, when I see someone come out of a driveway of an house. Ooh, enough to freeze one's manners. I should have stayed in that bus shelter. Oh, here comes me breakfast. Good morning, sir.
Don't bother me.
No, a few coppers, sir. A fine gentleman like yourself wouldn't miss a few pence just to get a bite to eat.
Your way, I...
Just a minute, sir. Mean old skinflint.
But he was gone. He seemed very annoyed about something.
Were you sure the drive was that of Miss Morris's house, and was that the driveway in question?
Yes, sir, it was.
And was it that man over there, the prisoner?
Yes.
Thank you, Mr. McCloyd.
Mr. McCloyd, for a gentleman of the road, you seem very smartly clothed.
Oh, thank you, sir.
Must have cost you a pretty penny.
Oh, well, I'll spend it when I've got it.
You have a regular job now, Mr. McCloyd?
No, of course not.
Have you suddenly inherited some money? A legacy, perhaps?
No.
Then where did this prosperity spring from, Mr. McCloyd?
Well, a Sunday newspaper paid in advance for me story.
Story? What story? Because of your importance in this trial?
Yeah, that's just about it, yeah. I'm going to give me impressions after the trial's over.
So, in fact, your appearance here at this trial is most profitable.
So what? I'm not committing no crime.
I'm not suggesting you are, Mr. McCloyd. Did you answer the appeal from the police? The same appeal that Miss Castle answered?
Well, I don't know about Miss Castle. I answered.
And what was your motive in coming forward with the information you were able to supply?
It was me duty.
You were a guest of the police, weren't you? Insofar that they provided you with transport to Gresford, and upon your arrival there with accommodation.
That's right, they did.
I should imagine that you hadn't received such consideration at the hands of the police before.
Well, I must say they was very good to me.
And you wish to express your gratitude by singling out my client at the identification parade because you knew which man the police were interested
in. Right, that's not right. He was the man that I saw leaving Miss Morris's house.
And the same man that you saw in the photograph the police showed?
Yes.
They'd have been awfully disappointed if you'd failed to identify him, wouldn't they?
Well, I suppose so.
I think the jury have heard enough of your testimony, Mr. McLeod, for them to be able to judge its value.
Can I go now?
Yes, Mr. McLeod. And I now call Dr. Ian Donaldson as my next witness. Dr. Donaldson, you were called to the residence of the late Miss Morris's on the 16th of October last year.
Yes, I was.
That was in your capacity as police surgeon for the District of Chester.
Yes, the woman had been dead for some time. I removed the body for more detailed examination.
And what were your findings?
Well, there's no question that the poor woman had been beaten to death about the face and head with a blunt instrument.
Were the injuries sustained conducive to having been caused by the brass poker which I have here before me? It's lying on that desk, marked Exhibit A.
Very much so. In point of fact, the forensic department of the Chester CID analyzed the poker, and there's no question that it was the murder weapon.
Were you able to determine the approximate time of the woman's death?
Yes. Despite the decomposition which had taken place, my colleagues and I were able to establish that Miss Morris had met her death in the late hours of the 15th October or the early hours of the 16th.
No more questions.
Doctor, having read the results of your examination and having been shown photographs, would you not say that the attack on Miss Morris must have been carried out with an almost fiendish brutality?
Yes, I would indeed.
I understand that you were called to the remand cells to give my client treatment for a severe bronchial attack.
Yes, that is so.
You recommended that he be hospitalized for some weeks.
Yes.
And during that time, you visited him daily.
I did.
Does the prisoner at the bar strike you as a violent man?
I am a doctor, not a psychologist.
Nevertheless, Doctor, you must have formed some impression.
He showed no symptoms of violence whilst I was treating him.
Thank you, that is all.
I now call Chief Inspector Bruce Arlen of the Chester Constabulary.
My lad, I'm reluctant to interrupt, learned friend, but in view of the time factor, could we not now have the adjournment, particularly as I would like to consult my client.
And so the court adjourns in the trial of Philip Barker for the murder of Elsie Morris. This dramatic presentation is brought to you by Bristol Myers. The trial proceeds. As the usher calls the court to order, Chief Inspector Arlen has entered the witness box.
Inspector, as the result of the finding of the dead body, identified as Miss Elsie Morris, you assumed charge of the investigations into her murder.
Yes, I did.
Will you please tell the court how your investigations proceeded?
Certainly. After the finding of Miss Morris's body, I attempted to seek a motive for the murder. Robbery could not be considered. Miss Morris was wearing jewelry at the time of her death, jewelry worth a great deal of money. In her room, we found a cash box containing gold sovereigns to the value of £358. There was no sign of a forced entry, so one can presume that Miss Morris admitted her attacker herself. Nor were there any signs of a struggle. Working on the evidence provided by Dr. Donaldson and the consulting pathologist, it was decided that Miss Morris had been attacked from behind as she came down the stairs. There was evidence that Miss Morris had had a guest for dinner because the table in the dining room was set for two. We sent out a notice asking for information which might help us in our investigations. This notice contained a description of the man given to us by Miss Castle and James McLeod. The prison governor of Gresford Prison thought it fitted a man called Philip Barker, about whom little was known, except that he was serving sentence for having defrauded the proprietor of a hotel in Buxton. The governor of the prison sent me a photograph of the man. I showed it to Miss Castle and James McLeod. Both said that Barker was the man they'd seen. I interviewed the prisoner with the prison governor's permission. Now, what do you know about a woman called Elsie Morris?
Nothing except what I read in the papers.
How'd you meet her?
Meet her?
Huh?
What is this? I tell you, I never saw her in my life.
Why did you kill her, Barker?
You crazy or something? I didn't kill her.
What were you doing in Chester last October?
I've never been in Chester in my life.
Supposing I tell you you were seen there,
I'd say you were trying to frame me.
In September and again in early October. You were also seen on the night Elsie Morris was killed. I've got two independent witnesses.
All I can say is that they must be suffering from hallucinations.
Where were you in October?
What date in October?
The 15th or the 16th?
No, I was in London.
Ah. Whereabouts? What address?
Moving around.
What were you doing in London?
I was trying to get a job, but no dice.
Where did you stay? What do you mean by moving around?
Well, I didn't stay anywhere. I didn't have any money. The three nights I stepped on an embankment.
So there's nobody to substantiate your alibi?
No. No, there isn't. But I swear to you that that's the truth.
I think you're lying, Barker. And I'm putting you up in an identification parade.
And was that identification parade held?
Yes, it was. The two people who travelled from Chester had no hesitation in picking out Barker as the man they saw near Miss Morris's house.
Were they present at the identification parade at the same time?
No. Two different parades were held on the same afternoon. Each witness attended a parade independently of the other. It was after the identification parades that I charged Barker with the woman's murder.
Thank you, Inspector.
Inspector, do you think that a miscarriage of justice can take place?
Well, I suppose it can happen.
I put it to you that you were all under such pressure from higher authority that in desperation you snatched at the meager evidence of Castle and McCloyd and gave it an importance it didn't deserve.
No, that's not true.
But you yourself indicated during your testimony earlier that you were so desperate for a lead that you had to ask the cooperation of the press.
We often seek the cooperation of the press. The description given to us by Miss Castle and Mr. McCloyd attracted the attention of the Glesford prison authorities. It was then that things began to move.
But supposing these two witnesses are wrong, Inspector? Supposing they've made a mistake? What other evidence have you against my client?
None.
You have no record of any previous association between Barker and Miss Morris?
No.
And you will take a look at my client, Inspector. He's young, he's tall, he's good-looking. Is he the type of man who would associate with a 65-year-old woman?
He was known to be short of money.
Yes, he was. But if he had associated with Miss Morris with money as his objective, and if he did kill her, as you allege, why did he not take Miss Morris's valuables?
Oh, I suppose he panicked when he realized what he'd done. Panicked and ran away.
You suppose? Did you find his fingerprints on the poker?
No.
Did you find them on the door handle?
No.
Or on the cutlery or crockery in the dining room table?
No.
No. But you had to make an arrest, didn't you? You needed to solve the case. So I submit you arrested him on insufficient evidence.
I'm satisfied that it was he that Miss Castle and Mr. McCloyd saw.
All right, Inspector. We'll see what the jury think. No more questions.
And that closes the case for the Crown, my lord.
Does defense wish to call witnesses?
Yes, my lord. My first witness, I would like to call Miss Fiona Hayes. Miss Hayes, I want you to look at the man in the dock. Do you recognize him?
Yes, of course I do.
You say of course. Does that mean you know him well, that you have met him, spoken to him?
He came and stayed with me. Oh, don't misunderstand me. It was all very respectable.
Stayed with you? At your house, you mean?
Well, it's a houseboat, really. I live at a place called Little Venice.
That is an area north of the London suburb of Paddington, is it not?
Yes.
How long did Philip Barker stay on the houseboat?
For the whole month of October.
Are you telling the court that the man in the dock, being charged with murdering a woman between the late hours of the 15th of October and the early hours of the 16th, was in London, staying on your houseboat at that time?
Yes.
You swear this on oath?
I swear it.
Thank you. How did you come to know Barker?
Well, sometime last year, I had a row with my boyfriend. He pushed off. He left me with a boat. And it rained during the night. Well, everything was sopping wet, and I was feeling miserable. Well, I was on deck, and I saw a man standing on the footbridge.
Crying, lady? On a lovely morning like this, all sweet smelling after the night's rain?
Oh, don't talk to me about rain. Look at it, and I can't get the stove to work.
Just a minute, lady.
What are you going to do?
Jump. You don't work this boat all on your own, do you?
You leave me to your stove. I could do with a cuppa myself.
He told me that he was looking for a job, and I took him on as a handyman.
How long did he stay with you?
For the whole of October.
Thank you. No more questions.
Miss Hayes, what is your occupation?
Well, I do a bit of acting. Modelling. You know, that sort of thing.
That sort of thing. I see. This houseboat, was it yours?
I've already said it belonged to a friend of mine.
Is the houseboat your permanent residence?
No. He came and collected it just before Christmas.
Miss Hayes, do you know that when the prisoner was asked by the inspector what he was doing at the time Miss Morris was killed and where he was located, he replied, London.
Well, I live in London.
Just a moment. When asked by the police whereabouts in London, he said, and I'm quoting, I didn't stay anywhere, I didn't have any money. For 3 nights I slept on an embankment.
Well, he said that because of me. He knew that if my boyfriend, who owned the boat, heard that there was another man sleeping on the Saucy Queen, he'd come back and do me an injury.
Why have you not come forward before?
Well, I wasn't going to be here at all. It was Mr. Clark, Philip's solicitor, who made me.
Are you telling the truth, Miss Hayes?
What do you mean, am I telling the truth? Do you think I'd tell a lie?
I don't know, Miss Hayes. I wish I knew. No more questions.
I now call the prisoner at the bar. The two witnesses that picked you out at the identification parade on November the 22nd, 1967. Had you ever seen them before?
Never.
Why did you not give Miss Hayes as an alibi when you were questioned by the police?
Well, you see, her boyfriend was a man who... Well, I'd never met him, but I'd heard about him. Known as Ronnie the Cub. If he'd have found out that I was living on the houseboat, I don't know what he'd have done.
Is not Miss Hayes still in jeopardy? Is there not a danger that her friend might still express his displeasure after reading an account of this trial?
Ronnie the Cub is doing 10 years in Parkhurst Jail. I read about the case whilst I was in prison. As soon as I saw it in the newspapers, I told my solicitor the truth.
That you had a perfectly good alibi for the 15th and 16th of October?
Yes.
Have you ever been charged with robbery with violence, or with assault with robbery, or even robbery without violence?
No, sir. No, I've been a tramp. I've lived by my wits. I've served 3 terms of imprisonment for fraud when they arrested me for not paying my hotel bill in Buxton and giving a phony check. Well, that's the worst kind of crime I've ever committed.
Thank you. That is all.
Barker, why should 2 persons, each from a vastly different walk of life, be so certain that you were the man they saw coming out of Miss Morris's drive?
Don't ask me. The whole thing's crazy.
Crazy or not, there are 2 citizens of this country who have sworn a solemn oath as to their conviction that you were that man.
I can't understand it. I really can't.
Had you ever set eyes on Miss Hayes before she came to this court?
I've already told you.
I know. You went and stayed on a houseboat that no longer exists at Little Venice. Supposing I tell you that a telephone call from this courtroom to the Paddington police has resulted in the extraordinary fact that no one can say that they had seen you on or by the river during last October. I suggest to you that Miss Hayes is a known associate of members of the London underworld.
Oh, I know that. That's why I was afraid to give her name as an alibi.
I suggest to you that you too are an associate of London's underworld. And for some reason, this young woman has been persuaded to come to this court and perjure herself.
My lord, this is outrageous.
Outrageous or not, that is my firm belief.
Prisoner at the bar has a prison record for fraud and robbery. No one can point a finger at him with accusations of violence, let alone murder. But mark this well, gentlemen of the jury. The unfortunate Miss Morris was not robbed. Who her assailant was, it is not for the defense to determine. You have been given a perfectly reasonable explanation for the late introduction of evidence which supplies my client with a cast-iron alibi. And you can do no other than release him from this terrible predicament.
Remember that when Barker was arrested in Buxton, he was less than 40 miles from the scene of the murder. You have seen this man here in this court. Does he seem to be the sort of person who would hesitate to use anything or anyone in order to safeguard himself against the terrible charge of murder? The rules of court procedure inhibit me from referring to Miss Hayes' testimony as I'd like to. Can you believe her story that Barker was with her at the time Miss Morris was being done to death? The witness, Miss Castle, or for that matter, Mr. McCloy. Are you going to disbelieve them? If you feel they're telling the truth, then you must find Barker guilty of a most fiendish crime.
Well, you have heard all the relevant facts. Now we ask you to consider your verdict. Would you say the accused, Philip Barker, was guilty or not guilty of the murder of Miss Elsie Morris? In a moment or two, we shall give you the verdict recorded in the actual trial on which this dramatic presentation is based. Well, what was your verdict? Did you find Philip Barker guilty or not guilty of the murder of Elsie Morris? In the actual trial on which this dramatic presentation is based, the jury returned a verdict of not guilty.